Welcome to the Irish Photography Podcast. Take control of your camera and develop the skills necessary to improve and master your photography. Join me, Dermot O'Donovan, John Myler and Darren J. Spoonley as they cut through the sometimes confusing jargon of photography to help you find your own style and decide what's best for you. A mix of educational, inspirational, honest and sometimes controversial content delivered in a unique, fun way from three of Ireland's talented photographers. Let's go.
So welcome to the next episode of the Irish Photography Podcast. I'm your host this week, Darren J. Spoonley, and I'm joined once again by my two intrepid co-hosts, John Myler and Mr. Dermot O'Donovan. How are we today, lads?
How's it going, buddy? How are you?
Very, very good. How are yourself?
Good. Sweating like a bucket here.
Ah, yeah. How about
you, Does that make sense? No, say a sweating bucket. It's not sweating like a bucket.
I thought he was going to say something bold and have to give a euro to the jar.
I won't lie, lads. I'm dying to get into the shower. I'm absolutely stink. And the dog's here beside me on the floor, right? And he's farting like a trooper. I don't know which is worse, me or him, to be honest with you. That's a good sign, isn't it, for the weather?
It must have been an energetic photo shoot today, was it?
32 degrees here in Shannon.
Yeah, I saw that in the news, actually, yeah.
Come here.
Costa del Shannon.
What does intrepid mean?
Intrepid? You never heard that word before?
No.
Google it. It was the name of a ship in Star Trek.
Well, why are we intrepid?
Because you see, you're leading the way.
I like that.
Yeah. Google it. You'll get a proper explanation.
Darren.
Okay.
That's a little bit intelligent for me now tonight.
Okay. We'll start. I'm hosting tonight, so I gotta have some sort of intelligence, like after the other two conversations we've had before now. And actually, on that as well, I want to ask you a couple of questions, guys, all right? So I'd like to know your thoughts on something that I've been wondering for a while. So I'm a landscape photographer, as you know. However, when it comes to other styles of photography, I sometimes struggle. So example being, if I'm having a party and I want to get pictures of the kids, I tend to go straight to the phone, as I don't want to be fluffing around with the settings and miss the moment, because you know yourselves, trying to get kids to stay still is hard enough. Now, both you guys shoot different styles, and you shoot people quite a lot. So what would your thoughts be on having more styles in your arsenal that will help you to become a better photographer overall? And I suppose, John, do you want to go first on that?
Yeah, I think that's a good question, Darren, and it's something I've often thought about. But for me personally, I think the more different styles of photography you can do will have a greater benefit in the style of photography you love.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is, if I am shooting a photograph here of my kids in the house and I'm using my flash photography or off-camera flash or whatever, well, then I feel if they're with me on a nice sunset and I'm taking my landscape and they're sitting beside me, then I'm more confident maybe to whip out the off-camera flash and maybe take a nice portrait of them out in the landscape. So, yeah, I do think, and actually it's funny you said that as well, because I was out last night in the Burren in a really, really nice place. Actually, it was in the middle of nowhere. It's absolutely gorgeous. It must have been 2 years someday. And I was photographing butterflies. Now, don't laugh, right? Butterflies, okay?
Sorry.
And hold on. I'll give you another little giggle. And orchids, all right?
Wow, that's a flower.
Non-orchids. No, that's a good combination.
This is actually quite interesting, because I was with there's another girl there, lady there, Anne. She goes by the name of Anne, and she's a very good photographer. She's a very good photographer. And we were actually walking through, and I don't know what you boys are laughing at now, okay? Because if it's acting to do with butterflies, you should see the way I can photograph them, man. I'm good at it. Yeah?
Okay. Well,
how about you shooting butterflies? How did it help your other styles?
Yeah. Okay, because we were walking through, right? And we were actually saying that, actually, when it came to the orchids, more so the plants, right? When you're shooting macro, and I was using my Sigma 105, and it's quite hard to get the depth of field right through if you want to keep it wide open. So I quickly was able to adapt to a focus stack.
Right? Okay.
And I wouldn't have known about focus stacking other than I'd done focus stacking in the landscape.
Interesting.
So I was able to bring...
Were you shooting the landscape though at the same time?
No, it wasn't, no, at all. There wasn't even a landscape image to be shot, to be honest with you. It was actually down an old boring road. But I was very, very quickly to adapt that skill of focus stacking into a macro photography. And I wouldn't have actually thought of those skills only for my landscape photography. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's quite interesting as well that you can apply that you have from landscape to a different side of photography, i.e. macro photography.
Macro. And it's just like as well, like, you know, I remember going to shoot my first Milky Way photograph. And I had shot plenty of long exposures, but I hadn't shot the night sky. So because I knew I had to take a long exposure photograph, I was able to adapt the long exposure technique to the night sky. So there was two different types of photography blended together that helped each other. And if I had stuck to as a one-trick pony, I would have never really have been able to adapt as quickly as I did in those two recent situations, I suppose.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I suppose something that made me think about asking the question here was, we were actually, myself and Dermot were on a shoot, and it was down in the Cork-Kerry border. And it was in the morning time after the sunrise, and I wanted to get a photograph of Dermot taking a shot. And I couldn't do it straight away. Whereas he just picked up the camera, bang, within, I suppose, instinctively, had the settings in, the shot was sharp, and it was done right. Dad, how do you find that, having that innate ability or that natural ability to, or studied ability, whatever it may be, but you were quick at doing it and you were able to get a shot or set up the shot so I could shoot you, and then the landscape as well came into it as well for me. Now, you shoot a lot of weddings, so you've got a lot of moments that you have to capture on a whim very, very quickly. How do you get your head around what the light is and how you have to have the settings, or have you got a go-to setting for when you're shooting people?
Most definitely. Now, when I'm shooting a wedding photograph, this is totally different. I'd have my shutter speed always dialed in, and depending on the lens that you're using, if you're using 70-200, your shutter speed should never be below 200 of a second. I'd always keep it up even more than that. If I'm using 70-200, it'd be a shame not to use 2.8. You have a 2.8. Use the 2.8. Okay, now, some people say this is cheating, some people say it's not, but it's just for me to have a bit of leniency to get everything right. I will use auto ISO, but I have parameters set on that. My camera, I have certain settings on my camera that will not leave it go above ISO 6400, which is when my camera starts to, the noise starts getting...
And we know you love noise.
Oh, I love it. It's my favorite thing in the world.
Yes.
So I would
use... the pixel man.
I'd use auto ISO quite a bit, because when you're in a church and you're photographing the bride and the groomsmen and the best women, what are they called? Bridesmaids, Jesus. I'm having a bit of laughter.
And you do this so often?
Every week. So
come on, best women, come over here, line up for the shot.
So there's bright and dark parts of the church. Now, if there's a moment happening in a dark part of the church, and I have to dial in my exposure and ISO, I take the shot. And then all of a sudden, something in a bright spot it has happened in church, and I turn around and I forget to change my setting. I mightn't have time, but with ISO, I can just go boom, boom, and I've both shots there and then. But to transfer that over to landscape photography, okay, and like in that position where you were, and I was taking that shot, okay, I was able to adjust quickly because I've trained myself to do this every week, week in, week out, with all these brides, beautiful brides.
Were they hot? Were they hot?
Yes, most of them are really hot. Actually, not all of them are hot. All my brides are hot. So, ha. But, I practice it week in, week out, and I'm used to it. And if it's not a bride I'm photographing, it's my kids that I'm photographing. God knows why I'm photographing my kids. I don't even like them. And my dog as well, you know, so.
And come here to me. Would either of you guys use back button focus?
Me. All the time. I never not use it.
It's actually a habit of mine, though.
So you what?
It's actually a habit of mine, though.
And would you use back button focus in the landscape, John?
I have done, yeah. Yeah, would you? Yeah.
Always.
Always. So yeah. What would be the advantages?
Recompose.
Exactly. So what would be the advantages of somebody? Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say again, Jaren?
What would the advantages of back button focus be over not having back button focus?
Okay, so if I was to back button focus, okay, and I set my focus point to where I want it to be on the scene, and I press focus, okay, it's going to be locked in, okay, and then I can take as many exposures of that scene that I want. Okay, if it was on the trigger button, then it's going to be losing focus and then hunting for focus again, and it could be in a total different spot then again. So if you're bracketing, you know, in that situation, you know your focus point isn't going to be changing. And that's one of the big advantages. And then you're not fiddling with the camera then to use the focus ring then either.
It locks on what you want.
Yeah. So, you know, I've seen examples of people using that when you are shooting a sports event, for example. But if you're shooting a sports event and you lock focus on, is it going to follow that person that you're focusing, or is it going to follow or stay on the depth of field focus that you've set?
I'll jump in there, Darren. Well, I've used back focus a lot now for the sports shots, and it's actually quite cool. So if I focused on the runner with the ball, for argument's sake, and he's crossing the field, and somebody ran on front of him and broke the focus, yes, we'll lock back on him again.
Okay, so make sure that what you want to be the focus of the shot will stay once that regardless.
Once you're panning with your camera.
Once you don't take your finger off the button.
And you're panning with it.
With my camera now, so it's basically the same as a 6D, but just a few extra features. Now, in saying that, the 5D 3 has 61 autofocus points, okay? So it has a bit more advantage to the sports. Now, there's other settings as well in the 5D, so there's acceleration and deacceleration. And with John, like I said, if someone breaks the focus, on my camera, it won't change the focus. It'll stick with your man, even though he's just blocked for a second. And it'll stick with him because there's a few extra advanced features for focusing. And that's why the 5D 3 was the prosumer camera, or the professional camera over the 6D. And that's one of the advantages that it would have. But it's absolutely fantastic for locking focus and tracking.
That's interesting because, you know, in the landscape, I suppose, in the photos I take, I'm on manual focus, or I'll set it up on autofocus to get the first steer and then I'll fine tune it, but I'll just use it from that point of view. And, you know, again, I'm from my experience on it, regardless of the focus point or the focus ability, it's got to do with the light that's going to be presented at that time. So if you think of a different style of photography, somebody who is studio photography or portraiture photography or food photography, they're not using natural light, they're creating the light, they're controlling the light, and they're able to understand light more, are they, yes or no, than somebody who is reliant on the natural light?
Well, they definitely understand the light more. It's imperative that they do, because it's one of their arsenals, it's one of their tools that is in the bag. Being able to manipulate the light to make it more pleasing to the viewer is essential.
Okay. Yeah.
They're actually creating the shadows, creating the fall of light. They're actually sculpturing the model.
Yes.
You know, you're actually sculpturing your model with your light.
So and actually that's an interesting point as well, because you might have backfill light, or you could have shooting something that you wanted to be standing out more, or as you say, creating shadows. And something that actually the three of us experienced was...
Actually, Darren, just cut across there for a second. I recently done a fitness shoot down in Cork. And the one thing in the fitness shoot is you're really... because people are well into their physique, they're well defined. So the one thing, if you want to define somebody's figure, you really have to sculpture that with creating shadows.
Okay.
So yeah, I agree. You really are in control of your light.
And I suppose, like I was saying there, you know, we had an interesting experience when we were on a shoot one evening in the Cliffs of Moher, and you both actually were able to get the shot set up, bring out the flashes, which is something I didn't have in my bag because I never used them from a landscape point of view, but I was able to get the shot of the three of us and the background. So you were able to control your own light or create your own light, but in balance with the natural lights. And that's, I think, was something that I looked at and went, that's why I think having a multiple skill set can help you overall. Would you agree?
Yeah, totally. Like that particular night, myself and Dad, we very quickly knew to expose for the background.
Yes.
And let the flash do its work.
Yes. And I suppose without that experience of using that equipment, you would never know how to use it.
No. Correct.
And do you think that there's any style of photography that doesn't benefit any other style of photography? Is there anything within the photography styles that has its own uniqueness that doesn't help you understand photography anymore? Or are they all linked?
I think they're all linked, to be totally honest. There's not one aspect that you can't bring from one style of photography into the other. Like focus stacking, you can bring that from food and product photography into the landscape. It's something that I've started doing a hell of a lot more recently. What else is there? Just like, there's tons of stuff like patience, even just from one style of from wedding photography, and just being aware of your surroundings. Like, you know, and you have to be quick on the mark. They all feed into every other style of photography.
And actually, something that comes to mind, there's two types actually. You mentioned it there about wedding photography and stuff like that, and also that's capturing moments, and that's capturing candid moments, and that's, I think, some of the photos I've seen from people, and some of the shots you've taken as well. That it's the candid moment that really makes the difference. So, as an example here would be street photography, or even more so extreme, war photography. They have to document a story in a shot. So, number one, you have to know how to take the shot, but number two, you have to look and have the eye for that moment, but not only for that moment, but how one image, one still frame can tell an unbelievable story. And I think that's something, that's a skill that not everybody can have, but it's something that I think is quite unique. Particularly in a war environment, because guess what? You're not just worried about getting the shot, you're worried about not dying. Let's face it.
You're worried about getting shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the whole war photography, like when I was studying in college, there was loads of iconic pictures that you'd see. You'd see Ali over, is it Fraser or Liston? And then you'd have the war one, right? Of in Vietnam, the child running down the street.
Exactly.
You know, and you know, it's
iconic those shots.
Yeah, those shots. Like, it is a talent to get them, but you have to remember, it's luck as well. You have to be in the right place at the right time and being able to use your camera to a very, very high degree to capture that moment is key.
You have to be the right kind of person as well, the right frame of mind for anything like that too. It's a want in that. I agree. I think that's a technique in its own as well.
It is, and you know what? That's something else that, like, for example, this is why I picked that one, because from a landscape point of view, landscape photography is very much a solitary exercise. You're more or less there yourself. You're in the landscape, you're whichever. War photography, you're not, but also you have to get to know the people that you're with, and you have to have an ability to be able to be relating to people, that they can relate to you, to feel comfortable around you, that you will get these shots. Because if somebody is going through a harrowing time and they see a guy with a camera, they're not exactly going to be comfortable in the first place, never mind say somebody taking photos. But when people can, and that's where you get the emotion, I think, on people's faces, when you see families that are, you know, in distraught because there's things that's happening, but there's a cameraman that's there with them, able to sharing the emotion that they're feeling. Do you get me what I say by that?
Yeah, like there is a lot of emotion in photography. There is a lot going on. Like if my family had been shot and we're in a war and some guy whipped out a camera and started shooting me, I'd probably kick the fools out of him, do you know, or something. I saved myself there though.
You saved yourself a euro.
Yeah. But you know, I'd first of all, I'd have to fear for my family, but I wouldn't appreciate what he's doing there in the moment either, you know, so.
Okay. Listen, guys, that's very interesting talk, and I think it's something we can probably touch back on again later into particular styles of photography, because there's a number of them that's there, but I really enjoy that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
So, welcome back. Our next topic here is quite topical one, actually, and something I've thought about for a while, and I wanted to get the guys' views on it so that they could share it with you, is the photographer the one that captures the image, or is it the scene that creates the image? Discuss. Dodd.
Oh, wow, this is very topical, and it is going to be very debatable, okay? All three of us, I consider us quite good photographers, okay? We have our own unique styles, and we have immense talent, right? So one of my strengths mightn't be one of yours, it might be one of your weaknesses, and so on and so forth. One of my weaknesses is planning, okay? I'm diabolical about it. I just try arrive on and maybe latch on to you every now and again and hope that you plan something out, and I arrive on the scene, okay? So to say whether it's the photographer that makes the picture or as the scene presents, scene presents this, the photograph, is that it?
Is it the scene that creates the image?
Okay. I think personally, it's the photographer makes the image. Okay, that's my point of view. Now the scene can help it. Okay, but if I went to a certain area to get a photograph, okay, and John couldn't do it, all right, he wasn't feeling it, he couldn't get a composition, but me being, let's say, super hot at photography, I'm the best landscape photographer out there, let's say, I can pull a photograph out of almost anything. You know, you'd have these lovely sea pinks over here where John mightn't have seen it, but I saw it, so I created something out of what he thought was nothing. So to me, it's definitely the photographer that's behind the lens that creates the magic. Okay, like I said, it's not to say the scene isn't involved, it is, but yeah, it's the photographer that makes it.
Okay, and John, what do you think?
Yeah, there mightn't be a row here at all, lads, unless myself and Dodd disagree with you, Darren, in a second.
You know, I have to make it topical for the sake of it. Go on, yeah. So yeah, you're agreeing with Dodd, yeah?
Well, yeah, I am. I am in a way, and I probably, you know, I'm. You know, you two know I'm big into the whole mindfulness end of things as well.
Go away.
And, you know, I wrote on my website a little bit about this, and the way I would look at it is that a scene presents itself to you. That's the way I look at it. That's why I go to the landscape. I don't no longer go looking for the photograph, whether you believe that or not. I will go to an area, but I always feel that the scene presents itself to you. But ultimately, you're the one who captures that scene and you capture that moment. Because at the end of the day...
So you're agreeing with both?
Yeah. At the end of the day, no matter what's in front of you, you know, we're the photographers. Yes, we can sit back and we can click the button. But we've got gear involved. We have to decide, do we need filters? Do we not need filters? You need to decide your exposure, to expose for one element or not expose for another element, the tools you need. There's a lot more that goes into creating that photograph before you actually click the button. And as you said, Dodd, a lot of that actually takes place before you even leave your house. So like, I would plan my shot of the area before I go, but only until I get to the area, until I see what it presents to me, before I capture that image, if that makes any sense to you two boys at all.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. And I mean, look, I've often heard Dad saying on many occasions that he'd rock up to a scene and if he wasn't feeling it, he wouldn't even take the camera out of the bag. Exactly. Sure, of course, he's not going to take the camera out of the bag because he hasn't planned it. He doesn't know potentially what's going to happen. So the planning aspect of it is really important. And that's from a landscape point of view, obviously. I mean, look, you've got to do a lot of planning no matter what you're doing. But, you know, if you want to go and rock up and get a nice shot, you've got a lot of luck, as you say, Dad, to be there at that right time. Whereas looking in advance, looking at what the light is going to be, the positioning in regards to the moon or the times or the tides or whatnot, and, you know, weather, big factor as well. So yeah. if you envision and pre-visualize the shot in your head that what you would like it to be, okay, great, that's how you know you're going to take a shot. You'll arrive on the location. The scenario that you've been presented with, you knew it was going to happen because you looked at the planning. Guess what? You should be able to get a good shot. However, if Dodd just rocks up at that same point with his camera and he knows how to take a shot, that's fine. But he didn't really do the same amount of work as me or you or whatever to be able to do the planning from that, then the scene presented that shot to him. He was able to take it because he knows how to use a camera, but he didn't create the scenario.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I agree with that too. But the way I would look at that is the scene may have presented itself to Dodd, but he wasn't mindful enough to capture it.
Well, no, he's going to take a shot right there because he's been lucky. He's rocked up at the same time that you knew it, that you've planned everything. You know exactly that thing was going to be happening there. He rocks up at that time and goes, wow, Genie Macaroo, look at that. Camera's coming out of the bag. I got a banger of a shot here.
But at that stage then, he still has to
know how to
pull the shot out of the bag.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So something then that I would have said on the previous episode is to know how to take a photo, you need a camera. But to take a photo, you just need a phone. So you could rock up there, take a photo with your phone, and you've very, very good shot there because you know the quality of phone. So you don't know how to take the shot there.
But
you can for a second. No, you can't.
You can't. He's the host.
I'm the host, all right?
Oh, so, damn it.
You got to sit back here, right?
So you got to take this stuff.
Like, somebody can take this shot with their phone it may or may not look exactly the same as either of you guys will get with your camera, because the camera's going to be better, you're going to have it exposed the way you want it exposing it, but just these phones are doing such a good job right now that, bang, that person gets the shot. To the layman's eye, would you know the difference?
Yeah.
So that, well, to the layman, not the photographer's eye.
Yeah,
to the
lay,
you no, would. You wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. If you rocked up at exactly the same thing and took exactly the same shot at the same time.
I think that all comes down to the composition and you know, the perspective.
And that's the point I was leading to.
Yeah. So like you may not have planned, you may not have done, you might have rocked up, you got the light, you got everything. You could stand there, stand by your car, take the image. But then if Dodd decided, okay, now I'm got, there's the image, but now I'm going to change my perspective.
Oh, yeah, he looks over and sees you with a camera and goes, what's he doing over there? Oh, hang on a second.
Down on my belly.
I'm going to sit down there and take the same photo as this guy. Oh, yeah, bingo.
Hold on a second. Is it my turn?
Yeah,
yet?
You can get in now. Yeah, you're okay. You can get in now.
It's about bloody time. You treat me like a child. You know that, don't you?
Go on. Make sure you do your homework.
Oh, go away. Anyway, so John touched a point in it there, right? It's down. And we only talked about this last week, guys, is perspective. Now, it is very important. So if I arrive up on the scene, you take your photograph with your phone, okay? It's going to be drastically different from the fact that I take my picture on a Sony A7R Mark II. Are you for real? You're telling me that the layman's eye could not be able to tell the difference between a crappy iPhone 6 or 7 to a Sony A7R Mark II? You are on drugs, my friend. Seriously.
How do I reply to that one in a simple way? But that, you know what, you are absolutely correct, but it's about, as you said in the first point there, knowing when you rock up there that somebody is mindful to understand what the shot is going to be, knows where to take the shot and can compose the shot. And I think that's what makes the difference. So yeah, somebody could be there absolutely with their phone, right? They can get a lovely shot, but it's how you take the shot. So I think it's a mixture of both, because you can get a photographer to go to absolutely crappy conditions where they would take the camera with the bag, whereas Dodd wouldn't, and they'd still end up with a reasonably good shot, whereas we know Dodd is looking for perfection every time that he'll go out shooting, so he'll beat himself up if he actually took the shot, because he'd have to process it later. So probably wouldn't take that shot, because knowing it's not going to be a masterpiece or an award winner or something, whatever it may have been. But I do think, you know, that's again this topic, we could go on about this forever, because there's so many other different areas that we could discuss in what makes a good photo, because not only taking it but knowing how to process it. And I've seen so many photos, you've all seen it, that are really, really good, you think, until the process. So it's about knowing and take a photo, yeah, but that's what comes afterwards. And that can be something as well that we can discuss another time. Okay, guys, thanks. So that's, I think, a very interesting viewpoint from both of you. And you both kind of, you know, okay, Dodd, you completely were on your own point about it's the photographer, absolutely. John, you know, you're saying about making the scene or the scene finds you. That's really important as well. So I think that's something that, you know, we can probably go into further when we're discussing the mindfulness aspect of photography with you at a later stage. Thanks, guys.
Are you on the fence, Darren?
No, absolutely not. I know.
I think John just wants to be both our friends. So he's like, yeah, I'll be your friend, Darren. Pick a side, John. John, pick a side.
No. It's one. No, Darren's on the fence.
You have to pick one. One has to be Dodd.
I think the photographer takes the image for sure.
Yes!
I
think
There you go. Well, if it truth be known, like I said, you didn't even ask me what my opinion was. I think the photographer takes a shot too. But it really does help if you've got a nice scene.
So you're back on the fence.
Oh, my God.
It's a big bloody fence.
Trying to rise me, you know. I know you are.
So, guys, okay, that's the end of that second topic there. We'll be right back here with a couple of words from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hainel Industries. Hainel Industries is one of the leading manufacturers of power products for camcorders and digital cameras. Having celebrated over 50 years in business, Hainel have an excellent reputation in research and development and a well-known history of quality products and excellent design.
So, welcome back, and now we're on to the final segment here of my episode this week, and it's our regular slot called VSP, which stands for Dodd V.
Very.
John.
Solid.
Product.
Do we do it all together now?
I don't know why I did that, but sure, yeah, I just follow on with it anyway. But
that's a bit tacky though, Darren, isn't it?
That's okay. But this week, guys, right, so my VSP is a product that I use quite a lot. It's something from a landscape point of view I swear by now. And I've used it pretty much ongoing from the moment that I got it. And it's a product by Hainel, and it's a product called the Capture Pro. Are you aware of it?
Oh, sweet cheese. I'm so glad you picked that today.
Why?
Because I use the Gigi T. Is that what it's called? I don't even know what it's called anymore. It does my nut.
Oh, that's the Gigi, that's the old Gigi version, Gigi T.
Right? And the only reason I use that is, right, is like that of taking a distance away from it. But if it came to setting intervals or time lapses around like that, it does my nut trying to figure it out.
Yeah,
so
that's
please
difficult.
Tell me that this is a lot easier to use. And there was also a post on Facebook recently by one of our colleagues here who was having a lot of difficulty with one.
That wasn't wireless, though.
Wireless.
That's but like Rolly, whatever the intervalometer. Yeah, very unhappy with it. I don't think I'll... it's in my useless pile over there with my inflatable dartboard.
But yeah, Darren, I'd be interested. So I'm actually probably going to sit back now and listen to hear what you have to say about that, because I'd be interested in getting one then, possibly.
Okay, well, look, there's a couple of interesting things about it, right? It's a wireless remote system. It has a range of up to 100 metres. So you can go quite far away from it. You don't have to be next to the camera. And that's the reason I would use it, is I don't want to touch the camera. If I touch the camera, I've got the risk of shake. And you see many people, they'll put on a two-second timer just so that there's no shake. This thing is just simple. You know, press the button, you know your shot is going to be taken. If you also has a lot of advantages, particularly when we're out shooting, well, I'm out shooting in the winter and it's cold, my hands are in my pockets. My trigger is in my pockets. I set my camera up, I'm pressing the
Darren,
button, I don't have to be taking anything out.
Can I come crash there for a second?
I thought you wanted to hear about it.
I know, but you're saying but to in your pocket, right? I've taken more photographs by leaning over to get something out of my bag with this Gigi T. Does that go off in your pocket quite easily, does it?
No.
No, that's good.
So your one is wireless, so John, is it?
Yeah.
John is talking about John has the old product. I have the newer version of the product, which is fantastic.
Right, okay. I like it, but it's just a bit.
I've had the old one.
I probably haven't given enough time to figure it out.
Which you move on, get with the times. Mm. That one that you have is old. Go for the new one.
Yeah.
So there's this Hainel thing. So how big is it? Is it cumbersome or is it light or?
It's actually, no, that's an interesting point. So the trigger that John had is a very, very small trigger. And that's probably why it kept going off in his pocket. Whereas this one now is more substantial. So it's like a small remote control that you'd have for your TV. So you put that in your pocket, you know it's in your pocket. You're not going to lose it as easy as well as the other one. And the other side of it as well is that built into this thing has four sensors for four different ways to trigger your shots. So you can that's your simple thing is from a wireless press a button trigger or shutter release, that's fine. But this has a built-in light sensor. It has a sound sensor, it has a laser sensor, and it has an infrared sensor. So any simple thing that you want to be able to do to enable you to trigger that trigger, you can do that. And not only that as well, but you can bring in, like, it has an auxiliary port, right? Now, I haven't used this thing yet, but you could do something of bringing in third-party products, for argument's sake, that's like a plate that somebody stands on, bang, it takes the photo. Or temperature gauges, so when it reaches certain temperatures, it can take the shot for you as well. So there that's are a lot cool. of lot of advanced differences that you can do from additional stuff that you can plug into it. But from a photography point of view, even I've seen examples where it's been used in a studio. So you want to do water droplet, for argument's sake. You can set that up that when it breaks the infrared beam, bang, it will take the shot. So there's no more messing around in regards to that.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's quite cool. It's quite cool. And, you know, the other, I suppose, area, too, that I really like about it is you got all these different programmables. And as you say, John, you know, you had a smaller screen to deal with on the previous version. I think this is really good because you got a bigger screen. It's so simple. It's so easy to be able to go through each of them. And like I've had it now from the start of the year, actually. And it's been really, really good for me. I've never had an issue with it. It's never missed. And it's always with me. And it's something that I really would swear by because, okay, if you look at what Dodd has the issue with there, what's the manufacturer that you have?
Rolly or Rolly. I don't know how you pronounce it.
Okay. So that's a wired connector. So you're now restricted to being close to the camera. Plus, besides it not working in the first place anyway. But anyhow. And then you can get cheaper versions, like very simple. I heard a guy actually saying the other day, you know, I think it was actually on that post saying, oh, just get those cheap ones, you know, and if they lose them, I lose them. But
I actually bought one of them. It only cost like €6 delivered from UK or something like that. So it's just to do me until I get something better, something cool, like this, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you know, like you got that there. You're restricted, okay? You got to be next to the camera. That's the first thing. Right, so you've no freedom of movement. You've nothing else to be able to trigger it except for pressing that one button that you have. And, you know, when you think about the other advantages of being able to take the shot or set it up in intervalometers, even though some cameras don't, like new cameras have got it built in, but older cameras won't. So you can set that up for a time-lapse photography point of view. If you're shooting long exposures, you can dial in the length of time that you want to expose. That's it. Bang. Press the button. It sticks on that. It's really, really good. Now, the other side to it, I suppose, really, is the advantages of the product quality. It's really, really good. It has a kind of a latex cover around it, so it protects it, but also gives you very, very good grip. And, you know, within the Capture Pro set, like I say, you can apply it to numerous different types of photography. And that's what I really like about it, you know. So I'm swearing by it since I actually got it. And I still have the wired version. I still have the Giga T Pro. And the wired comes with me just in case that the other one doesn't work. But I've never had to use the wired one since. And I haven't had any shaky shots either. How about you, John? How often have you used the wireless? Or do you not use it because you've had issues with it?
How often? Yeah, I haven't used it now in a while, to be honest with you. And I probably have been using it more when taking long exposures than anything else.
Yeah,
I don't use it if I'm just out and doing my general landscape shots that I might just throw my 2 second timer on the camera. But I more so use it if I was taking long exposures or if I wanted to get myself in the image. It's not that I hate it. One thing is, one, it drives me mad because it goes off my pocket.
And that's two, the size, I think.
And two is I tried to do a time lapse on it before and I just couldn't figure out how to set it up, basically. This interval one, interval two, and then spaces. So I only ever use bulb mode or the shot itself.
Okay, next time we're out, I'll give you a look at this one. You can give it a go. And you, Dad?
So sorry not to come back to the thing. I'm just really interested, and I'm sure listeners are mad to listen to how it actually works. Is there something connected to the hot shoe, or is it just wireless to the camera, or what is it?
No, there's something connected to the hot shoe. So you've got a receiver. Now there's two packs actually that you have to get for it. So you can get a main module, right, which includes the remote control, and that has the infrared triggering kit. That's the main pack. Then you get a secondary part, which is the remote trigger set. So you've got a receiver and a transmitter. So it goes on to the hot shoe. And if you want to use your flashes as well, then you can use that as well to send that message on to your flash, the same kit. So you press the buttons on the controller. You've got it connected into your camera, which is through the receiver on the hot shoe. Everything is away there. Or you can then couple that up, like I said, to attach it onto remote flash as well.
Okay.
You know, that will come in very handy.
Where?
Just had a thought there. You know, that come in very handy. Do you remember that task that I gave you last week to do your star trail?
Oh, yes.
Can you do star trail? Can you use it for star trail photography?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, you can just set it up. I want to do the exposure, press the button, it'll continue on until I stop it.
Cool. Look forward to see the result.
Yeah, I know. I'll have to do that. And Dodd, you know, maybe you could help you too for your architecture show.
Yeah.
I don't need any help. Right? Ah,
okay. Okay. Well, actually, you know.
Darren? How much?
Well, yeah, look, how much?
This is the interesting part.
I'm sitting here and I'm like kind of going, I have to ask her how much this is, right? And herself is going to say to me, how much is another piece of photography equipment? And if you tell me now that it's like 70, 80, 90 euro or 100 euro, like, you know, I'm going to have to start doing a few more brownie points in this house. But if I really, really want one?
Yeah, of course. But
And is it worth it? I don't know how much it is, right? But to me, if it's over 70 euro, it has to be bloody goddamn worth it. Or I wouldn't not buy it. Because there's other old stuff out there that will do the same thing at the end of the day.
It's unbelievable for my use of it. And I wouldn't think of anything else, I suppose, really, because I haven't used anything else. I don't know what they are. I know that I've used other products that have been perfectly fine. And when I got this one, it just blew me away. It got a lot, lot better. So, you know, the price of it, the main module is €99. That includes the infrared triggering kit.
Did you say euro? Euro,
euro, yeah, yeah. And then the remote triggering set, which has the receiver and the transmitter, that's €59. So altogether, you're looking at a cost of €158. But that's something that I think you will benefit from no end. And think also, you know, you're looking at that price here. We were looking at a piece of glass with no technology last week. It was €129, which will break very, very easily, that you put into your bag and allows you to take one style of shot. This allows you to take multiple styles of shot, and you can apply it to all different areas of photography. So, yeah, it might be more expensive than a standard little cable,
but you're paying for what you get.
It's hugely beneficial to a number of styles of photography.
Okay, you actually sold me on the last 30 seconds. When you said the price, I went, oh, okay, yeah. I might have to hold off on this one. But then when you can, like the VSP last week, you compare it to that and what I can do with this VSP this week. Yeah, I might dip into the piggy bank and maybe. John, I'll take your one first.
Yeah, you can have a go on my one.
I'd like to try it first.
You'd have to stop using your Sony to try my one first. You have to use the old Canon.
I don't mind. I still like me using my Canon. My Canon gets used 70% of the time. Sony only gets used 30% of the time.
Okay. So next time that we're out, we'll have to organise a shoot anyway soon. But next time we're out, I'll give you a go of it, guys. But yeah, that's my VSP for the week. It's something.
Darren, before you go, Derek, can you throw it up on the Facebook page? Can you?
Yeah, I can do. Yeah, I can show.
Yeah, just throw it up an image of it, maybe, and a few shots that you got with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course. I mean, there'll be shots of actually an interesting shot that I'm speaking of now was I was away recently in Snowdonia, and I was in a beautiful place called the Fairy Glen, and I wanted to get a shot where it would be something different than anybody else would have had, because there was a group of seven of us there, and obviously everybody was shooting the same scene, and that's not really a different or a scene that you can shoot from different viewpoints. So what I decided to do was put myself into the shot. I used the wireless remote, so I set the whole thing up, composed it, had the whole thing focused, walked down, stood there. I was around, I don't know, 30, 40 feet away. I was using my 70 to 200, so it was zoomed in for me from a compression point of view, and I just took the shot, and I knew it was taking the shot. I didn't have to be worrying if it was taking the shot or not. I didn't have to be, like, cameras that have it built in, for argument's sake, with an intervalometer. It's taking a shot, taking a shot, taking a shot, taking a shot. You're going down there, you know, if you're taking a shot of 10 seconds, you know you have to stand for around 30 seconds to ensure that you're not missing out on one of those shots either side. Whereas with this, bang, the shot was done. And like I said, it's really, really good, and something I use in the landscape on a regular basis. So yeah, I'll throw up some shots there on that.
So it's fair to say you're very confident in the product.
Absolutely. I wouldn't put it as VSP, very solid product, unless I was actually very confident in it.
Cool. Okay, I'll have a look at yours, though.
Okay. So thanks, guys. That was three interesting topics that we discussed this evening. Who's in charge next week?
I am.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Ah, okay. So
next week, we're going to have a special guest on next week.
Special guest?
Yes.
I was already on last week, Dad. I was already on last week.
Yeah, I'm not going to say who it is yet, but yeah, it's going to be a special guest. I'm sure you'll all enjoy it.
All right.
Okay,
so
cool. Look forward to that.
Yeah. So tune in next week there for the special guest courtesy of Mr. Dermot O'Donovan. And guys, I've been Darren J. Spoonley. Thanks very much for listening in. Thanks to my two intrepid co-hosts. Go Google that there now, sir.
Google that now. And can't even spell it. Never mind. Google it.
Yes. And
how do you spell it, Darren?
In.
Yeah. Go on. Yeah. Keep going.
In. Get your Google there. In. Trippet.
And off you go. And I'll help you to use the keyboard if you want. So yeah, I'll see you all guys next week. Thanks a million. And from me, Shlonga Fall.
Thanks, Darren. See you.
Cheers, Darren. Good luck. Bye bye.
If you've enjoyed the Irish Photography Podcast, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, guys, keep shooting.